This is Red Ice Creations Radio. Thank you for tuning in. Nice to have you along. If you are listening for the first time, welcome. My name is Henrik Palmgren. RedIceCreations.com is our website. Frequently updated news, radio, videos, films, links, resources, and much more. We are based out of Sweden, Scandinavia. We discuss and highlight everything from conspiracy and spirituality to the occult, the esoteric, new technology and science, philosophy, history, secret societies, geopolitics, religion, and so much more. Anything that might help you to open your eyes and get even more understanding both about the world around you and maybe even yourself. We are here doing radio interviews on Thursdays and Sundays with interesting guests for your consideration. We do not tell you what to think or what you should believe, and we try to present the information in the best way we can and help to highlight the research of authors, filmmakers, and other researchers and bring their information to your attention. And we think that you should make up your own mind about these subjects that we cover. Question the material, continue the search for yourself if you find it interesting. Right, I have an announcement I want to make also here at the beginning. At the end of September, date not set yet, but very soon, at the end of September, we're going to start up Red Eyes Live. That means video and audio feeds from our studio, and this is going to be more like TV than radio. This is interviews with clips, film excerpts, images, video, photos, graphs, or whatever kind of visual aid that we can use that will help us to go even deeper into many of the subjects we cover. And this is going to be really awesome, a whole new level to Red Eyes. Although we really enjoyed the first live program we did several months ago, we didn't continue with those because we thought that we could do a whole lot better, and we have. We've got a whole new system that will enable us to have a whole lot more freedom when it comes to what content we'll be able to run during the live programs. So stay tuned to our website for much more information about this. So again, at the end of September, we're going to start up nice and easy, and you'll be able to tune in live, and this will get better and better as we proceed. All right, let's bring on our guest here today. We have Steve Wilner with us. It was almost 6 months ago since we had our last, our last program with Steve. It's incredible how fast we're moving in time, or at least my perception of time, that is. It really doesn't feel that long, but anyway, Steve is of course a video artist extraordinaire that covers all things esoteric, occult, and synchromystic. He's behind the website labyrinthofthepsychonaut.com. His blog is labyrinthofthepsychonaut.blogspot.com, and his YouTube channel, of course, is youtube.com/soundlessdawn. Do take a good look around, a whole lot of material there for you. And Steve recently teamed up with Jay Kutze from The Blob and did a really nice three-part series, and number four, I hear, is in the pipeline. We're going to talk about that, but also about CERN, about some movies, and we spent some time on CERN, by the way, back in March with Steve. And obviously, since then, a whole lot has been happening. The pieces are in place, and they've done a test run. We have loads to talk about today. So, Steve, thanks for coming back to the program. It's nice to have you with us again.
Yes, it's wonderful to be back, Henrik. I'm excited about the new facet of Red Eyes. It sounds really excellent. The show you guys did with Chris Knowles, I thought was really, really fantastic, and I'm glad you guys are moving into that live arena for sure.
Absolutely. I mean, a show, for instance, we have to have you back, for instance, where we actually can be able to play clips, right? You know, in real time, you can comment on it, stuff like that. So I think it's going to be really fascinating getting into that. Yeah.
The realm of synchromysticism is so elaborate and textured. Jake and I were actually talking about it. It would be a lot simpler if we had some kind of handheld, you know, holographic device that could basically record our thoughts, because there's just so many facets and wormholes in it that you end up going into that you can't even, you know, get them all down in one video or one blog. It's very difficult.
Absolutely. I'll bet it's going to come, right? They have all these new toys now where they can read brain waves and what have you. So I mean, I don't feel it's far off in one sense. It's going to be really exciting to see what the heck we'll be able to do with all this new technology coming online.
Sure. Sure. There's going to be a lot more people talking about these sort of esoteric topics as well as it applies to their personal lives. So yeah, it'll get very fascinating for sure. And I think CERN's going to be, you know, a huge part of where the internet goes, since they were basically the birthplace of the the World Wide Web in the first place.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. I think it was developed under the ARPANET or something like that, I think, Internet, and they were definitely spearheading that, so they seem to be quite on the ball when it comes to new technology, that's for sure.
I mean, yeah, they're certainly attempting to, you know, open the floodgates and sort of supercharge the progression of concepts like string theory, hyperdimensional physics, you know, time travel, to name a few. And like I said, you know, they basically created the World Wide Web. It was a concept of theirs. And, you know, WWW being equivalent to 666 in the Hebrew language, I always found fascinating. And after these new series of experiments are completed, they're planning on rerouting all their technology towards enhancing the evolution of the Internet even further, you know, leading to breakthrough and, like I said, holographics, medicine, human consciousness, genetic engineering, you know, basically reinventing the world in a way, even you know, that might even dwarf the findings that they're going to have at these amazing tests that they're running currently. So it's a really fascinating time to be in, I think.
Absolutely. And what I kind of really – I remember hearing about CERN many, many years ago, and it was something that kind of caught my you know, curiosity, like right away when I heard about it. I don't know why, I don't know for what reason, but there was something there that was just fascinating to me on what they were doing. And what I think is really interesting right now is to see this, the kind of direction they're going with this almost a spiritual component in this scientific realm. They're talking about the Higgs particle, right, or what they call the God particle.
Yeah, exactly.
They have Shiva, right, doing her dance outside the CERN facilities, you know?
That's quite odd. There's a lot of bizarre symbolism. I mean, CERN is more or less a Genesis machine. It's a glimpse into the cosmic sap of existence. It's like our first scientific baby step into understanding, I guess, the concept of true being or where we came from, our origins, and we're doing it from a scientific standpoint, so we're actually going to have data to back up what we're seeing. You have people like William Henry mentioning that, you know, CERN bears resemblance to the ancient Egyptian hieroglyph depicting the Osiris Stargate device at the Temple of Abydos. And so basically it's a modern version of something ancient civilizations may have already tapped into in a way. Mm. And, you know, I know many of your listeners are aware that the scientists at CERN have been receiving some really serious death threats lately to dissuade them from sort of unlocking this Pandora's box. And if you remember the film Contact, which I'm sure you do, Jake Busey played this religious extremist who thought the concentric interlocking circle Stargate machine that Jodie Foster used to traverse, you know, the wormhole, was basically an abomination of God, and he actually strapped dynamite to himself and destroyed the entire compound. And luckily, we find out that H.R. Haddon, or Hadron, as I like to call him. The eccentric billionaire who funded the project had secretly built, you know, a second Stargate machine in Japan. So, you know, the mission was still a go, and I really wouldn't be surprised if that's the case in our reality as well. Not to devalue the triumphs of man's scientific endeavors, but I'm sure, you know, there's an ET technology already in human control that could probably conduct what the 17-mile track in Geneva is about to attempt, and probably fit in the palm of your hand. You know what I mean?
Well, exactly. I mean, We can't really know. I mean, we are speculating on this at this level, but I can just imagine what the, you know, black ops budget, you know, or what these guys have been developing deep underground or whatever.
Exactly. This is what's public, you know, this is what is made to the public. And, you know, anyone that's, you know, delves into conspiracy knows that what's given to the public, what's taught in the school systems and universities is probably 15 or 20% of what actually exists out there. So, you know, it really is. When you have something as grandiose as CERN and how large it is and the expectations of their experiments that they're going to undertake, you just have to wonder what else is out there that isn't being talked about, you know?
Exactly. So, I mean, for, you know, what we are being given here, so to speak, this is CERN. This is so far the biggest scientific experiment in, I guess we can say, modern human history then. And again, as I mentioned, the search for this Higgs particle, the God particle, they're trying to recreate mini black holes, what have you. But I mean, the timing of this test run that they did, Steve, what do you think about the timing there?
Well, I mean, that's just, you know, absolutely mind staggering. Basically, the Higgs boson particle, what you're calling the God particle, is thought to be the thing that gives matter its mass. And to observe it, they're going to be colliding hadrons, or specifically protons, together at unimaginable speeds at close to Absolute Zero, I believe. And, you know, they're naming their experiments very interesting things, such as Alice, Atlas, and Totem. You know, Alice is an obvious Wonderland rabbit hole metaphor, and Atlas is the primordial titan who supported the heavens. Yeah. And Totem, which I thought was interesting, is supposedly any entity which watches over or assists a group of people, such as like a family, clan, or tribe. Mm. And, you know, that really screams to me extraterrestrial, you know, assistance of some kind. And, you know, you have the test run coinciding with the 7th anniversary of 9/11, which was, in my opinion and many others, and, you know, really started by Jake, the whole concept of being a mass ritual or a ritualistic event.
Yes.
You know, when you have people basically, you know, glaring into – well, those who understand significance of ritual magic understand the purpose behind having almost every mind in the world focusing on a pentagram within a pentagram within a pentagram, et cetera. And, you know, three buildings that were geometrically built to represent the pyramids of Giza, all crashing flush with the Millennium Hilton building, which was purposely designed to mimic the aesthetics and meaning behind the 2001 Space Odyssey. And, you know, the ones responsible have never come forward, but their motive has become more and more clear, you know, through their actions and predictable behavior. And now 7 years later, almost to the date, you know, we have another Stargate opening event or a consciousness opening event that is, you know, occurring right now on the Earth. And it's creating massive earthquakes. I mean, well, it itself hasn't created earthquakes, but it's speculated that the worldwide earthquakes that were reported had something to do with the test firing of their first collider beam.
Right. There were, let's see here, I think it was a 6.1 in Iran, like very recently after they started up, I think.
Right, and then but there was actually quakes, small quakes all over the world. There was, I think, a 5.4 in China, 5.1 in Chile, 4.8 in Fiji. So moderate quakes all over the place, even off of the United States, Alaska, and the coast of Washington. There were small quakes, and of course there was one in Dubai, where the latest incarnation of the Tower of Babel is being built as the Burj Tower.
Yeah,
it's basically, you know, the largest building in the world. It's sort of a huge finger pointing directly at the gods, saying, you know, here we are. Are you going to come down and confuse our language again this time? Or are you going to let us continue our experiment? So,
yeah.
You know, and there's also been tragedy, you know, revolving around it. Believe it or not, there was a 16-year-old girl in India who committed suicide, apparently in fear of the end of the world after seeing the first test of the collider on television. So,
really?
Mm-hmm. You know, this event is certainly rattling some people to their core, and I know there's been a lot of loss lately in the synchrospheres with Kent and recently with Rick Clay, and it's very strange to watch these people leave us in this time when it's sort of the nexus point when we're reaching the ecliptic and we're actually progressing towards the possibility of a new evolution, a new utopian society. So
yeah.
It's a very interesting, you know, series of events all over the world.
Absolutely. I think, you know, we were talking a little bit about that they're into, you know, that they represent rather kind of new technology on what they're doing here with the CERN facility. But allegedly, I don't know if you heard that or not, it was a hacker group, was a Greek group, I think. They called themselves the Greek Security Team. Yeah, that's right. They left a rogue webpage describing the technicians responsible for the computer CERN security at the giant atom smasher, kids.
I read about that. They supposedly had like access to the actual, you know, experiment. They were able to turn it on or off from a website.
Yeah.
I don't know. I find that kind of hard to believe that a multi-billion-dollar project like this would be able to be so easily hacked. But I you know, anything's possible. It's hard to say, really.
It is. Well, we'll see what's going to happen. I mean, again, they've just started this thing up basically and just done a few test runs, and I think that this was basically just the detectors that were spotting, you know, when the electron or proton was going around inside, and I think they don't have actually made any physical smashing yet. We'll see what happens when they begin and do some of their kind of major experiments. But one thing that really kind of boggled my mind, I've been thinking about regarding CERN, is that they're trying to recreate the first, or rather the following like milliseconds after the Big Bang, right?
Correct.
And to me, it's more like the Big Bang, what that represents, it's something growing out of nothing, from that singularity, from that point that something is kind of expanding. But what they're doing here with CERN is kind of, to me, the opposite. They're actually smashing things together. Like, it's a very explosive and kind of male and very masculine way of doing it.
Sure. No, I agree with you. But I mean, what they're observing is not only the moment that the Big Bang occurred, if in fact that's how this sort of matrix came to be, but it's an oscillation of the universe itself. It's the cosmic crunch and the expansion. So it's sort of like the heartbeat of this holographic realm that we live in. And they're basically looking at it from a point at the level of a God particle, which means basically, you know, the things that make up, you know, the quarks and the things that are even smaller and things like string theory. So they're going to be looking at the very essence of it all. And I think it's going to lead to, you know, breakthroughs in many, many realms of science and spirituality as well. I just watched this YouTube clip where they had the CNN advertisement, or not advertisement, just sort of a informative thing on CERN. And there's a subliminal in the actual logo. You see a planet. It's like the intro for CNN or something. And if you slow it down, there's this saucer-shaped UFO with these vortices on the north and south part of it. And it flies through the planet like in slow motion, basically. So you see this flying saucer with these like orbs coming out on both sides right before they talk about CERN. And I think it's curious too, Heinrich, that the geometry of its primary chamber is octagonal. I mean, in the synchromistic society, we talk about that all the time. The octagon and number 8, or gate, as it is in the, you know, spelled in the number, is synonymous with the Stargate, which not only represents sort of the illumination of societal and individual cosmic consciousness, or sort of breaking open the head, but also, you know, the channeling and gaining of, you know, interdimensional entities possible, and the bending and warping of space time, and something that I talk about frequently called quantum superimposition, which is a fancy way of saying basically if the world can have any configuration or any possible arrangement, there's also a very of particles or fields. If the world basically could be in another configuration, the world can also be in a state which is a mixture of the two. So there's also very strong octagonal geometry configuration in structures like the Freedom Tower that's being built, where the 9/11 towers were collapsed. You know, the pyramids are actually octagonal, although many will argue that they're not. On the facets of the sides, they're actually sort of indented towards the middle, so they are actually octagonal. Then you have the K2 or 1111 mountain range, and that's also octagonally shaped as well. And K2 is a synonymous with Ketu. It's the Hindu god, and it's a very serpentine looking god as well. And you have the television show Lost. Have you seen that? Any episodes from that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Been following not the recent series, not the recent season, I mean, but at the beginning of the first few seasons I watched, and I think it's really interesting, some of the stuff
the facility is called the Dharma Initiative. It's placed in several research stations around the island, which take the form of these hidden underground facilities or bunkers, and each of the facilities have a particular logo associated with it, and it's basically inscribed within an octagon. Yes. And there's different particular symbols, like a hydra, a caduceus staff, or a white rabbit, and it's also known as the looking glass. So then you have experiments at CERN being called Alice and being tied back to the Wonderland themes again. So there's obviously a very very specific message being portrayed. It's just you have to read between the lines in a lot of cases.
Absolutely. I think J.J. Abrams, I think, is called one of the creators behind Lost and a few other series. They have a new one coming out called Fringe, and that should apparently be quite interesting. I think there's one episode out online right now. I think I'm going to follow up on that. Have you heard about that, Steve?
I haven't heard. I think I've heard about Fringe, but I'm not sure about the plot or anything else around it. Yes, I'm definitely looking forward to that. There's just so much going on right now. I had somebody email me basically they said, do you ever find it overwhelming that, you know, not just one or two of these movies are so relevant to your research, but seemingly every movie at the movie theater right now has to do with it? And, you know, I couldn't say that 5 or 10 years ago. It really has come to a point where these esoteric topics are being subliminally and metaphorically infused in the plot lines of all major motion pictures. And it's so saturated that it's obviously affecting the collective mind, and it's a reflection of of reality in that it's mimicking fiction at this point, or vice versa. And it's absolutely astonishing, some of these some of the things that are coming out in these films. And you know, it overlaps with a lot of the research I've been doing, basically the concept of who is watching the watchers.
Right.
You know, it's a, you know, look how far we've come from 9/11. I mean, look how many people have united and understood the message the cosmos left for us on that day. You know, we inch ever closer to true knowing or gnosis. We inch closer to freedom. And the archetypical sort of Luciferian reign behind the scenes, which I believe is, you know, basically the worship of, you know, transdimensional ETs from the underverse or some kind of parasitic dimension, I think that that is really coming to an end. And they sense they're losing power and they're losing grasp over the Earth, because our sheer will, our sheer numbers at this point, Henrik, are starting to be overwhelm them. And, you know, a lot of people don't believe in the power of collective consciousness, but I definitely do. And I think that combined right now with everybody that's doing the research that they're doing, and things like YouTube and the internet, you know, broadening ever so wider, and Pandora's box going ever so deeper, that they are really losing their grasp on this sort of materialistic, sadistic behavior. And we're starting to the turn of the tide is coming, which is so, you know, amazing to see. And it's very hopeful, you know.
Sounds very hopeful indeed. Absolutely. I mean, with so much kind of symbolism, esotericism going on in movies, in TV series, what have you. I mean, one obviously tends to, you know, ask that question, you know, what does it all really mean? I mean, is this good or bad? Is this, what is this doing to the mass consciousness in that sense? Because I'm still thinking about the idea of those who are watching this, but potentially, I mean, we have to recognize that some people are not kind of interested at all in kind of analyzing. They're just sitting there watching this for entertainment, right?
They
basically are unaware in one sense. So what do you think? Do you think it changes them?
That's what I'm saying. That's the beauty of it. Even if they're just watching for entertainment, it's subliminal and it's subconscious, and it's going to aid in the 12th monkey syndrome, or whatever you want to call that event. It's you know, it's going to come to a boiling point where even the most, you know, cynic critics of this kind of, you know, conspiracy theory, once they start seeing the amount of people coming forward, they're going to start making the connections themselves to films that they've seen decades ago. And it's going to start to snowball and culminate into something massive. And even these skeptics are going to eventually turn, because it's not always about having, you know, tangible proof. It's about intuition. It's about, yeah, you know, it's impossible to describe something like, you know, a dream to somebody, or a near-death experience. I mean, can you say what, you know, what color or what a near-death experience smells like? You use your intuition. You use your spiritual awareness at that point. And people, you know, all people, I believe, are aware that they're – I mean, even atheists and people that are agnostic, I think, know that they're a little bit more than just, you know, carbon, flesh and blood, you know, tubes walking around. The sheer idea that we're conscious and we're alive and we're talking to each other, and that there even is existence, is just too remarkable to ignore. And the intelligent design and symmetry and geometry of the cosmos is obviously not, you know, random or chaotic. It's at least to me, I know there are people that would state that, but it's too overwhelming and just wonderful to just know that you're alive and that you're mortal, and that we have this amnesia of that which is eternal, and we're slowly learning, and we're slowly relearning that, yes, that which was forgotten very long ago, you know?
Well, exactly, and I think even the process of again, I mean, many people talk that science is very, you know, in that regard, unspiritual, but I can even see there in many cases, especially people that have been really kind of immersed into one area of science. I mean, we could talk about quantum mechanics, right? There are other you know, areas here in science as well that actually have made people kind of religious, if you will, that they're discovering how incredibly intricate and detailed and beautiful weaved together the reality is of what they're studying, and they can't help but to realize that, shit, you know, there's something going on here, there's some kind of
design
here, you know.
People are trying to even manifest these things happening. Like, it's absolutely limitless what we could do with our conscious intent, you know, collectively as a species. There's a movement right now on YouTube that I've been absolutely bombarded with. I've probably received like 60 emails about it, and it's concerning this 3-day mass sighting of a 2,000-foot-long alien craft over the skies of the southern United States. And they give a specific date. They say October 14th of this year this is going to occur, and it's going to hover there for 3 days. Now, mm-hmm. you know, skeptics are going to go crazy, and they're going to probably have a field day if it doesn't occur. But I think that the point behind this sort of 3-day first contact establishment, it's not so much a prophetic message as they're saying that we must unite and will for the event to occur. And a lot of people say, you know, ETs won't fly down here and rescue us or do any of this unless we, you know, collectively in a large enough number want it to happen and manifest it. And that's amazing. If you view reality or existence in a holographic way like I do, I think that if enough people focused their intent on something or meditated their intent on something, that it would definitely tangibly manifest. So now you have people asking for, you know, sort of the firing the grid phenomenon. You know, if enough people attempt to manifest their collective thought, then the results will be made tangible. And we see that being used against us by things like the New World Order and the Illuminists, who, you know, have been basically using the perceived certainty of the faithful in the Christian religion and others for this possible Armageddon, World War III, destruction of Jerusalem, second coming type event.
Yes.
And, you know, I say they're using it against us because, you know, George Bush Sr., who's basically the modern-day Fuhrer with his Blackwater SS, which is, you know, by the way, interestingly enough, uses the bear claw in the center of a target as their symbol, which can be traced back to the swastika as it's rooted in the aesthetics of polar hyperborea and the Arctic race that sort of observed the past of Ursa Major, the
exactly.
bear, what it traced throughout the sky in the procession of the season. So their actual patchwork, the Blackwater patchwork, is the bear claw. So it's just a cleverly, you know, disguised symbolic anagram for the swastika. And it's basically, what people that don't know, Blackwater is a private military compound founded in 1997 by a man named Eric Prince. And it's been alternatively been referred to as security contractor or mercenary organization. And it's the largest in the world. They pay these people an extreme amount of money to do what they do. And are you familiar with Benjamin Fulford?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard interviews with him?
Yeah.
He is one of the forerunners who've come forward about this, and others who state that basically when it comes down to the declaration of martial law or illegal search and seizure, or, you know, defiling any kind of civilian rights, you have to ask, will these men and women that work for Blackwater obey their orders? I mean, they are human beings. I mean, Hitler had 80% support, and what do the Bushes have, or the Bush regime have at this point? You know, even within the other 12 Illuminati families, I think you would say, you know, 10-15% if you're being extremely generous. He also says that there's a deadline set for September 30th of this year, which is the end of this month, to pay back an enormous debt that the Bush regime has incurred. And basically, they simply don't have a way of repaying it. So the hope is that another country or Japan would front the owed amount in some kind of stockpiled gold, because it's really in no one's interest to see America become financially crippled. And, you know, we see the phenomenon absolutely saturated in the media as well, in particular the television show Jericho. Jericho was a series – basically, it was a series that takes place in the aftermath of nuclear attack on 23 major cities.
Yes.
In the United States. It's produced by CBS Paramount. So, of course, you have the all-seeing eye watermark on the bottom of the screen sort of glaring into your brain the whole time that you're viewing it. and the subtleties, right? You know.
Yeah.
And how about the subtlety or the dragon or serpent-eyed Colosseum built for the Beijing Olympics? I recently read an article you posted on your website about the different symbolic implications of the placement of the iris in the eye. I think it was called Sempaku.
Sempaku eyes, yes, exactly. It's fascinating, and I was searching for it because I heard Sempaku from Robert Anton Wilson, and I stumbled across this really interesting article that went into that, about the basically that you can read the health of a person by seeing if they have, you know, two whites, so to speak, on each side of your iris,
right.
Continue.
I have a little clip from the article right here. I wrote down. It was basically said when a baby is born, the iris or colored part of the eye is usually beautifully balanced between the upper and lower eyelids. It touches the upper and lower lids so that no white or sclera shows above or below. And the sclera is visible only to the left and right, and that indicates balance and a healthy nervous system. But what do we see on the floating eye above the pyramid on the dollar bill? We see the iris floating to the top with the white or sclera showing at the bottom. So that's apparently a representation of illness, deception, and an unbalanced distribution of power. So, you know,
isn't that a spot on, isn't it? You know,
it's perfect. And, you know, that it's also a time cycle. If you look at the, I have another website up here. If you look at the actual, pyramid scheme or the dollar bill, the famous Illuminati Great Seal, basically, it's constructed with 13 rows of stone representing 13 eras of 13 years. Between the date when the Bavarian Illuminati was founded, 1776, and I think it goes to 2010. And it's basically, altogether, it's indicated that there's 18 eras of 13 years ending in the year 2010. So the very top of the capstone ends in 2010. And that's equivalent to 234 years. And then the statement on the bill says, the wording is, E pluribus unum, which means for many one, which a lot of people have said that's the new world order, the one world government. And, you know, the United States has always been one nation comprised of many cultures and nationalities. Thus, one combined with 234 years is basically 1, 2, 3, 4. It's a sequence. You could actually read the pyramid in stages of 13 years from 1776 to 2010 as that. And it adds up to 234, as I mentioned. And the ending date of 2010 is significant when you consider that, you know, some ancient civilizations have predicted the year 2011 to 2012 as the end times, you know, including the Mayans.
Yeah.
And 1111 is a sign of change or transcendence. You know, 2011 may be written as 2/11, meaning two 11s, which again represents a doorway between two states of being or existences. And 1111 is sometimes reversed as a sign of chaos because in change there is chaos until a new order or pattern begins to emerge and solidify. So this suggests that basically the year 2010 is the last and final year of a grand era or cycle, and 2011 is a year of chaos and reorganization. 2012 would be the completion of this event, and I guess 2013 would be the first year of the fifth world or the new aeon that the Mayans spoke frequently about.
Yes.
And wrote about. Basically the golden Aquarius age. At which time the new phoenix will be born in a way, or in some symbolic way.
Well, exactly, and I mean, I think that all these things kind of brought together is what makes again this picture so interesting. I've been following the sun, for instance, very much in regards to the activity of the sun, the solar flares, the EMEs, and we mentioned it so many times in this program. But it's worth mentioning that the peak of the next cycle is around 2011, 2012, and this could, I mean, we'll see what happens, of course, but it feels just, so much right now like the quiet before the storm, the calm before the storm, because there has been zero basically activity on the sun, and I had an article up about that
Tell that to the people of Galveston, Texas. It's just the quiet before the storm.
Oh yeah, there you go.
they're about to get slammed by a hurricane, unfortunately. And I wonder why these hurricanes always conveniently choose to annihilate the areas where we have our oil factories and our oil distribution centers. It seems like they always hit there, and then gas prices are just they shoot up like exponentially, and we've had Tesla, free technology, the knowledge of it for, probably over 100 years, at least, a ridiculously long time in the past. We've had alternate means of transportation than fossil fuels. So we have these like storms. A lot of people say that HAARP is a facility that's actually able to create, hurricanes or create storm systems. And these things are just slamming into the coastlines where there's mass quantities of oil, almost to give them an excuse to gouge the prices considerably and to enslave people financially. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's a good possibility. Again, we know that there's different types of technologies. They could easily be steering things in one direction or the other. And I even find it interesting that, let's see here, Katrina. Was that 2004 or 2005? Do you remember, Steve?
That's 2005.
2005, okay. Because and then we had this really quiet period, right? For 3 years, And now
basically nothing.
Exactly nothing. And this season is incredible.
Exactly, exactly. I was just in Orlando recently, and we had the I can't even remember the name of the hurricane that is there, but it was quite weak. But the season overall has been extremely active. So I'm curious to see what's going to happen the rest of the year. And you know, as I mentioned before, the concept of who is watching the Watchers, our alleged masters, are the people that have put these, you know, puppet strings on our backs without our permission, basically.
Yeah.
And the film, The Watchmen, is coming out. I mentioned that I might talk about this to you before. For people that don't know, The Watchmen was a 12-issue sort of Zodiac Wheel limited run comic created by a man named Alan Moore.
Yes.
And it's set in an alternate reality that closely mirrors the contemporary world of the 1980s, of course, with a few differences. I think Nixon still in president, the Watergate event never happened. So then you have the Watergate phenomenon as well, which I think is a very strong symbolic event, because you have the water and the gate. So you have the Aquarius Stargate event tied around that period. And I guess the primary difference is the existence of superheroes. However, the primary focus in this story is examining the human flaws of its hero characters rather than sort of hoisting them up on a pedestal. And it's a theme that's been coming up a lot in my research, which is basically, like I said, who is watching the Watchers? Or in other words, we know there are factions of people in the world that are indeed acting as sort of godlike keepers of humanity without our consent, you know, without being appointed by anyone, hiding in the shadows of obscurity, or constantly pulling a new mask out of the closet so as to keep their identities concealed. And this thought form has also appeared in the recent Will Smith film Hancock, where he plays an immortal or Nephilim type being with amnesia of his origins. And again, society basically bastardizes him for his careless way he chooses to keep order or abuse his power. And he eventually willfully is put in prison. So you have the sort of absurd idea of a god incarcerated or trapped in a world that he governs. And you have Charlize Theron, who plays his magnetic other, or, you know, basically a soulmate, and has followed him through the branches of time, all the while being drawn to him like a magnet or opposing polarity. And every time they're in the same proximity, they start to become mortal, and they basically are able to die. And Theron resonates with genetic memory, Akashic records, and cloning, because she played in Aeon Flux. So it's synchronistically appealing to see someone basically portray a watcher, angelic presence, as well as someone who's been genetically engineered as a type of messiah figure, basically savior of the world. There's another very interesting film out that Jake and I have been talking a lot about concerning the Godhead with amnesia, and that's going to be the title of my upcoming video, the fourth installment of the series that I did with him. And the movie's called The Nines. Have you heard about this or seen it?
I have actually seen it, yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. Yeah. So Ryan Reynolds plays a godlike being that has created several micro-universes, and it's explained to him that God is basically a 10, and humans are a 7, and that he is a 9. So therefore, he can destroy the world with a single thought, or create the world, or create multiple worlds. And he exists in many different forms, and none of which are real in any kind of tangible sense. And he even masquerades in an incarnation as a computer game programmer. So he's basically a god masquerading as human, creating virtual worlds within the microcosm itself, which as you could see is an endless fractal loop. It's a very, very amazing symbolism in that film. I think it's a wonderful story. And there's a very similar storyline to the film The 13th Floor or Lawnmower Man. In the 13th floor, the creator of a virtual reality machine basically discovers he's actually a part of an even higher vibrational virtual world above him, and so on and so forth into infinity, basically. And the Lawnmower Man, the character Job Smith, he goes, you know, he's the one that goes from retard to Rembrandt, basically, and actually states that nothing he's learning or has learned is anything new. He's simply reclaiming the knowledge that ancient conjurers and alchemists had discovered eons ago. And he's reclaiming the knowledge through virtual reality. So.
Yes, yes. I want to spend a little bit more time on the Lawnmower Man. I actually, when I saw this clip that you're talking about now in one of your latest videos, I went back and rewatched it again, and I must say it's incredible. I mean, I thought that it would be more kind of you know, silly in a way. When I watched it many years ago, it was like, as I remember it, was like, oh, it's really, you know, bad acting, really nothing to it. It's quite awful. But then I rewatched it, and there's so many esoteric, occult, symbolic messages. It's religious symbolism, of course, rampant in it. You know, it's like, it's incredible. Did you watch the entire movie, Steve?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, that's one of my, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find a movie that I haven't seen, Henrik. And I do watch them for pleasure as well. It's just,
yes.
I constantly have my eye open for, you know, synchronistically relevant events while I'm watching them. But,
yeah.
You know, it is curious once you go back and sort of watch movies that you enjoyed in your childhood and find all these things in there, these little gems that correspond with the research that you're doing in the now. And,
yes.
I think that's what's wonderful. Like, I think I watched The Fisher King when I was a little boy, or at least a young man. And I watched it again last night, actually, and I just found a plethora of amazing, you know, sync events.
Yep.
There's a moment where Jeff Bridges looks at the clock, and it's exactly 9:11 on the clock, and then immediately it pans to sort of this building with a 33 on it, and there's just there's just very strange coincidences like that. I think one of the best ones, or the best 9/11 stinks that Jake and I have found, is the one in Trading Places with Eddie Murphy, where he actually walks into the World Trade Center's towers with Dan Aykroyd, and they're just trading stocks, and it's like a frantic pace, and Eddie Murphy looks up at the clock, and sure enough, it's 9/11, like flush. And you know, he's inside the World Trade Center tower. So it's stuff like that. When you and the new, I mean, I don't know, when did the original Matrix come out? I don't even know how many years ago.
99, I think it was.
I know. Okay, so 1999, and you know, a month ago or so, or 2 months ago, it all of a sudden comes forward that Neo's passport expires 2001 September, you know, 11th. So how in the world, considering the message of that movie and the amazing metaphor to what we are experiencing in reality right now, how in the world did that get in there in 1999? I mean, how?
Yeah, exactly. No, I want to do is I want to call up the freaking folks who planned the scene, who printed out that paper, who did, you know, did all the artwork, and really get to the bottom of that. You know, it's like,
I mean, that's the kind of stuff.
You know,
I mean, we talk about all kinds of stuff that you know, skeptics would just sort of scoff at or laugh at, but when we bring something up like that, they have to, like, even they scratch their head. They're like, what in the world? How could this sort of messiah Neo figure, who is, you know, representative of unplugging, you know, the mass consciousness from this false reality, have a passport that signifies a real event that has yet to happen, that is doing the same thing that the movie is stating? Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because, I mean, that's basically what the human race is doing right now with projects like CERN, in culmination with the approach of the cosmic nexus and the alignment with the holographic center or galactic center. You know, it's the main galactic hub of photonic energy. So it's basically the organization of light that's going to give us a glimpse of the creator gods above and the creator gods within, and, you know, completely renew our conscious path, the conscious path of our species. It's going to rattle the very soul of the omniverse to its core, and every living sentient being on it, or in it, or with it. And, you know, tying the synchronistic slant to the whole phenomenon, Jake just recently put up an excellent quote over at his site, The Blob, that sums up why we might be seeing these shifting patterns in reality through such seemingly random thought forms as the motion picture industry. So I'll read it for you. It's a quote on his site. It says, movie stars are as below resonators of the skies above. Their earthly movements through the silver screen reflect the drama told by the heavens. It is therefore no surprise that synchromysticism increasingly finds these stars aligning with the Stargate or galactic center. And, you know, it's also no coincidence that we call them stars.
Exactly. My point exactly. Yep.
or that the silver cord, which separates our soul awareness from one dimension to another during the death sequence, is so closely worded to the silver screen. And why a fragment of film is called a celluloid. Like our very biology. There are two films off the top of my head where the main characters are actually pulled through a movie screen or Stargate. Donnie Darko, of course, and The Last Action Hero. And these are mere reflections of our biological and metaphysical makeup. You know, the metaphors go so deep it's sometimes not even a good idea to follow a single thread because it will, you know, undoubtedly unwind into a spiraling labyrinthian, you know, Fibonacci sequence that has no beginning or end.
you know, one thing that comes to mind, I want to kind of have this in two different ways, so to speak, or kind of lay this out there for you to comment on if you want to. One side of this is, of course, that the sinister aspect of this is, okay, this is more evidence that 9/11 was an inside job. This is more, even more subconsciously planting the idea in all these movies beforehand. There's a really incredibly controlling force here that has its, tentacles into even the movie productions and TV series productions and are supplanting this here and there. And that's all what's going on here. The other side to this, of course, is that we, as we observe all this stuff, as we nowadays, in one way, I would say, unfortunately, are looking more at the movie stars instead of the stars themselves.
Of course, but that's because it's closer to our realm of understanding than something so far away as the macrocosm of the cosmos. Mm-hmm. But in reality, it's just a reflection of above and below. And, you know, microscopically, we're going to find out at CERN that most likely these God particles are going to have to do heavily with our reality in this manifestation on this level in the now. And so you have the realm of, you know, below, the realm of the now, and the realm above. So we're just basically learning from what we are most bombarded with, and what we're most bombarded with is the media. And it's a reflection of our consciousness, and the universe is a muse for directors and actors. And a lot of people ask me if these things are done on purpose and if the actors are consciously aware. Like, you know, people like Keanu Reeves, do they know that they've played so many roles? Like, he's also playing in the film The Day the Earth Stood Still,
yeah,
which is about another alien invasion of the Earth. Mm. And the tagline is basically if you die, the Earth survives. If you survive, the Earth dies, or something like that. And there's a gigantic orb that, like, surfaces out of the Atlantic. It's a gigantic alien spacecraft shaped like a sphere. So you have the, you know, Aquarius residents. And then you have Jennifer Connelly, who's also in the film. You have the initials JC, or Jesus Christ, and then you have the Aquarius symbolism. And she was obviously famous for being in the film Labyrinth, and she was also in a film called Dark Water. So you have, again, the water or the silver cord connecting the mother-child womb idea. And, you know, these are more or less the language system, or an emerging language system that we're just starting to interpret of the universe. It's always been here. It's just we're now becoming consciously aware with things like the internet and, you know, basically socially expressing these ideas to so many people out there. We're able to actually decipher these elaborate code works that are embedded within the universe. And, you know, it is, go ahead, go ahead.
Oh, sorry to interrupt. I just want to squeeze in here. Do you think that idea, though, takes away a little bit of the artistic work that some of the people behind the movies are doing? I mean, again, is there a half a middle way here, so to speak, that many people are that are working with these movies are very into mythology, they're very symbol literate, they can this stuff, and they are very consciously planting a lot of this stuff in the movies? What do you think?
I think that certain movies are deliberate in the way that they implant ideas. You know, things like The Da Vinci Code or National Treasure, where there's blatant Masonic over and undertones, and the release dates are coincided with solstices, and I think those are deliberate. I mean, those without a doubt are deliberate. But I and many of my fellow researchers find the most fascinating sinks are the ones that are not created with the human hand, are just sort of random acts of the universe that we happen to stumble upon.
Sure.
And again, you know, I've told you before in interviews in the past that anything, if you look at a system long enough, patterns will arise. It's the syntax or meaning or personal significance or social significance, meaning if 1,000 people glean the same things from a certain coincidence, it means a lot more than, you know, just some kind of random thing you think you might have made up just for entertainment. Hmm. So I try to talk about the coincidences that thousands of people are talking about instead of just things that I find interesting myself. Therefore, it's a reflection of the collective will, and it's the It's basically what is reflected with our mind, our thought forms, and what is seen on the silver screen. I don't think that it takes away from you know, the art form of motion pictures or actors or directors and the talent in that way. I view it more of they use it as their muse to create wonderful pieces of art.
Right.
And maybe they do. Sometimes it's subconscious and they don't, you know, deliberately know where it's coming from. But that's the beautiful thing. When I'm making my videos, I zone out to a point where I don't even know what I'm doing sometimes. Like I literally will be, you know, collaging and montaging things, and I'm using some kind of sequence of my brain that is on autopilot. And then I go back and look at it, and I'm like, oh my God, this is like I'm piecing together pieces of a dream here that I've had, or you know, that's where the intuition or subconscious you know, spiritual link to art comes in. And that's where in my opinion, that's where all wonderful art and masterpieces come from.
Exactly. I think you're absolutely right there. Again, working with the muse, as it were, this is more like a download. I think everyone who's into playing music, who's painting, who is you know, even dancing or something like that, a creative expression of some kind, would probably agree with that idea that being in spirit, so to speak, or being inspired, inspiration, having that, you know, being in contact with the muse, if you will, that's a very kind of unconscious experience in a way. You're disconnected from yourself in one way, but you're connected with your higher self in a much more profound way. And I think that this could be actually very much the way that messages, so to speak, from the above realm, from the divine, what have you, actually reach down into our level, down into our world, you know?
Sure. And that's what I credit the success that I've been having with Labyrinth of the Psychonaut. It's, I use things like my near-death experience when I was a small child, and it happened to be in water, of course, Aquarius. And I use my dream cycles, which I've been recording every day digitally for the past, you know, 4 or 5 years. And I use these things to make my art, and that's what separates what I do and what Jake does from sort of the more bland conspiracy stuff that you see on YouTube and everywhere else, because it's just it's basically trying to factualize things that aren't in fact facts. They're you know, it's an art form. It's a montage of intuition, of things that are just beyond the cusp of human comprehension. And a lot of times people are uncomfortable if it doesn't fit into a certain prescribed box for them. But, you know, it's obviously gaining momentum at such an incredible rate. I mean, I don't have as many hits as, you know, kittens on a treadmill or a sneezing panda, but or Afro Ninja. But, I mean, it's growing to a point where I can't answer all my emails anymore. I can't get to all my YouTube mails. And people are absolutely, you know, flippantly sending me research and in a very way that Rick Clay sort of bombastically came to the conspiracy circle and just unloaded all this information. It's something that just comes to you, and all of a sudden you have to get it out in every possible facet that you can. And
yes.
We're seeing that speed up more and more. And you know, people are going to be looking to you, to the Palmgren brothers and to Steve Wilner and Jake Kotze and to Sarion and all these people. I know there's a lot of infighting in people that say, oh, these people are working for disinformation. But I don't think it's a time for infighting. I mean, I've even had absurd emails saying that, you know, Red Ice is – you know, anti, you know, disinformation. I'm like, are you crazy? Have you have you spoken to Henrik? This man is a spiritual warrior.
Right.
And, you know, it's absurd of you to say that unless you know the man personally. And I don't even know you very well, but just in our conversations, I could tell that you have a true spirit and a true soul.
Well,
and
what
you're looking for is truth.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and again, this is, it's not my job to convince those who have doubts. I mean, I welcome that. Do question everything. That's the idea here. And I mean, again, some people are never convinced, and some people are, you know, never going to have their own ideas, their own kind of make up their own mind about these things, but they go on a word from someone else or what have you. But again, it's what I see at this point is more like it's such an incredible waste of time. You know, there's really no time for me to respond to those silly accusations or do anything like that, because there's so much to do, so much fun stuff to dive into.
And, exactly.
And again, it doesn't matter, because these people are so you know, in on their little branch anyway. So I mean, let's just
state it in unison then, Henrik. No more infighting. Let's do this together, brothers. You know, if someone's spreading disinformation, how does that really affect you personally? If you're an intelligent person, you can differentiate between what's true and what's not.
There
just
you go.
by using your intuition. So
well, exactly. You know, and even so, I mean, I was thinking about this yesterday. Even so, isn't it possible to learn from people? I mean, in any regard, what I'm saying is that if we think of, let's take a classic, you know, everyone hates, right, in the conspiracy circle. Let's take George W. Bush, right? If he says something profound or something intelligent, something good, something that you would agree with, would that mean that the person who is anti him would take automatically the opposite side to him just because George Bush said it? And then,
well, that depends on if it's George Bush clone number 4, 5, 6, or 7.
Right.
No, I see your point exactly. I know what you're saying.
Yeah. So, I mean, overall, I think it's ridiculous. And as you say, I think that the important thing is for people to make up their own minds about this stuff. And if they think that someone is this or that, or, you know, fine, sure, go with it. You know, it's like, it's none of my business anyway. I'm here, you know.
But there is one thing without a doubt. And that is the Watchmen. Once again, I keep bringing back that idea. There are a faction of people on this earth that think that they're above the collective and, you know, are associated with the illuminated tribes or whatever you want to call them. And it has nothing to do with sort of the Merovingian Jesus bloodline. These people think they're, you know, descendant or have the most ET hybridization in their blood. I really do believe that to be fact. I know, you know, many people can view that in any way, shape, or form that they want, but
sure.
Just from the research that I've done, that faction of people does exist in this world, and it's something to be reckoned. And I think we were talking about the Watchmen. The character Dr. Manhattan, he's sort of this bruised mushroom Vishnu-like blue-skin character that sort of mimics the psychedelic experience in a way, just by the way that he looks. And he's got this target or circle dot over his third eye, and he's got these godlike abilities to see into the future. But in most cases, he chooses not to interfere. He subscribes to a deterministic view of events, basically at one point in the series remarking that we're all puppets. I'm just a puppet who could see the strings. And this is identical to a recent role in which the Hollow Earth and Shangri-La resonating Brendan Fraser played in the film The Air I Breathe. In which he's basically a psychic who in most cases doesn't change the future outcomes that he's able to view because he simply doesn't feel like interfering with them or interfering with those certain time branches.
Right.
And, you know, it's a similar choice given to Will Smith and Hancock, again, you know, posing that same question. And it's something that we need to do. It's not something that we should be passive about because, you know, I believe that all possible timelines do exist and everything that can happen will happen. And it's our decision which now we want to live in. Our actions actually, you know, can change the patterns of the future. And, you know, places like Red Eyes and my website, we are, I mean, not to sound, you know, narcissistic or arrogant in any way, but we're actually changing the way or the path that the future goes because our thought forms are basically embedded in other people's minds and they go out and they talk about these things and they're nothing short of life-changing. These actualizations of what may or may not be going on behind the scenes are changing the way that thousands, if not millions of people are feeling about themselves, their existence, the possibility of the afterlife, the possibility of chaos and order and the eternal. And it's making them question it. And we're driving them further and further down this wormhole. We're sort of the pilots of that phenomenon, and without this, without us, without this movement, the world would be going in a different direction. I really believe that.
Well, I think you're right there, obviously, again, because this is, I mean, we could talk about it from the world as an observer of this individually, meaning that when, you know, one changes, you know, your own mind or your own thoughts about things, the world around you will look different, hence you will be automatically in a different world, right? You know, again, we have that whole idea, and this can be even proven down to science now with quantum mechanics, that what you are paying attention to, you know, that becomes something that manifests basically in one form or another. This is something that something that potentially is going to become more prominent in your life, depending on, again, we can just think of symbolism, right, or synchronicity or synchronicism, that if you pay attention to it, if you're looking for it, you're going to spot it everywhere, right? But these people who aren't doing that, they don't have a clue. They don't know what you're talking about, you know, in many cases. Precisely,
and that's why I think that Jake and I are going to do some – he's terrific when it comes to tutorial and the explanation of the basics of it. I'm more into just, you know, I don't like to backstep and explain myself over and over again, but he is so great at making someone that has no idea about the phenomenon understand about it. So I think that we need to start talking at conferences, we need to start doing documentaries, and we need to really let people know that there is – I mean, this kind of information can fill encyclopedias of knowledge. I couldn't even begin to write a single book because the appendices and the index would take up, you know, 900 pages. It's something that is so vast that people can't wrap their minds around in one setting. So we have to constantly go back and sort of pick up the people that have fallen along the wayside. But eventually, as we evolve as a species, everybody's going to sort of be on the same page and won't have to, you know, won't need that tutorial, won't need to keep going back in time to look at why this is happening or whence this came from. It'll just be the now, and that'll be the most important thing. Like, I know we keep reiterating and bringing up events like 9/11 because of how fascinating and meaningful they are, but we should focus on the now. We shouldn't be locked in some kind of gated idea that we need to think about, you know, these sort of rituals that took place in our past, because you know, the people that created the ritual, that was one of their intentions, was to basically get people so focused on that that they can create a new future or something, or, you know, basically they start making the world as they see fit while we're just back in the past focusing on a previous event, and we can't let that happen.
So why don't we do like this then? We can take a short break right here, and then we'll continue talking more in the member section. I think we're up towards an hour here already. Time moves so fast. But before we do that, Steve, give us your website addresses again, so people that haven't heard about you or your work can find some of your material and continue search for their own.
Okay, well, the main site is www.youtube.com/ Soundless Dawn. It would be SoundlessDawn, and you could watch all my videos there for free. I have a website that I've sort of been slacking and negligent in updating just because I'm constantly researching and making these videos, but it's you know, www.labyrinthofthepsychonaut.com. You could purchase merchandise there. You can make donations towards my jaw surgery, which I still haven't had, by the way. It's been pushed back to November due just to complications in orthodontics. And if you guys, you know, are inspired by what's happening right now and you want to help, you know, help me get healthy and help me do future projects with Jake and maybe even the Palengrin brothers, which is long overdue, I think, please, I would appreciate it so much if you could donate anything, because, you know, monetary funds are, in my way of thinking, just basically energy. So you'd be giving me your energy for me to convert into this science, into this art, and take it to new heights and to new levels. So I would appreciate anything that you guys are willing to give towards the movement. And I promise you with all my heart that I will be a warrior on the front lines for you, you know, for all time, for as long as that I'm on this earth, and I don't plan on leaving anytime soon. So my other site is www.labyrinthofthepsychonaut.blogspot.com, and that's something I'll be updating more often. And what I'm going to do is start posting my videos with a little bit more explanation and sort of a longer blog that describes some of the brief symbolism in the videos, because it's a lot to fit into 10 minutes. I understand I have to talk very fast in them, and I understand that people miss a lot of the symbolism that I put in there. And that does one of two things. It makes you want to watch them over and over again, hopefully, and but it also confuses the hell out of you. So I'm going to try to update my blog a lot more often and put really specific information in there for you. So I'm looking forward to where it's going. Again, I want to write books. I want to do documentaries, conferences, and I want to unite this clan, all these people that are trying to bring freedom and free thinking to the forefront. And I think that we can do it. I really do.
Beautiful. Okay, so again, the website, labyrinthofthepsychonaut.com, and also, of course, check out labyrinthofthepsychonaut.blogspot.com. Thank you very much for this segment, Steve. Stay with us. We'll take a break here, take a few deep breaths, and we'll continue with more.
Absolutely.
We are going to continue talking more with Steve Wilner in our members section. We're going to talk more about movies, symbolism, Steve's top 10 list of interesting movie releases in 2009 that's worth keeping an eye on. We'll also talk more about technology, the power of the internet, and a little bit more about the series that Jake and Steve did. So head on over to redicecreations.com and simply enter our member section, or if you're not a member, click on subscribe or sign up from our front page at redicecreations.com to find out how to become a Red Ice member. You'll get instant access to our entire radio archive, where we also have video interviews, short film articles, and our upcoming live broadcasts archived. Thank you for listening, and thanks to producer Fredrik Palmgren. More coming up now with Steve Willner.